Jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle bells to you. 'Tis the season to treat yourself. So go over to patreon.com/we-need-to-talk-about-ghosts and sign up for just $5 a month. You'll get access to new weekly episodes just for you, you lucky Patreon, as well as a load of dibble-dabble and squiddle-diddle. If you want to know what they are, head over to patreon.com/we-need-to-talk-about-ghosts. Jingle all the way now.
Live from Liverpool, we need to talk about ghosts with Kevin Eustace.
I'm dying. I wish there was a more jolly way of me starting this podcast. I'm not actually dying, but I was basically given a diagnosis of tonsillitis midweek, which has led to me having tonsillitis, if the doctors are right. And then as my immune systems hit the floor, I now have a very deep cold. So there will still be an episode, and if this is it, I thought it would be rather fun to lull you into a false sense of enjoyment with that intro music, because it is the most wonderful time of the year, and then to deliver the news that I'm bloody ill. So even in an illness, we can have fun, don't you think? As I like to say to the terminal ward on my visits. So yeah, that's where we're at. But we're still going to read out some spooky stories and we're still going to get scared. And I want to thank everybody who's emailed me to say, do get better, because I did announce it on Patreon to say that I had tonsillitis, because I was unable to do the Patreon special this week, annoyingly, because my voice had packed in. I'm just about starting to get it back, and I've just been lumbered with a heavy cold. So that's annoying. I do hope that you, however, are all fantastically well and not full of tonsillitis / colds, and you're not sat there with a hot water bottle on your chest as you speak and some Beechams on the left of you and a pot noodle to the right, because you've got to keep fed. What did they say? Feed the cold, starve the fever? That's how granddad died. It wasn't really, it was cancer. Anyway, God, this is going to be a weird one, and I apologise in advance, but let's crack on. What's new? Well, nothing really, because that's what, you know, being wiped out does to you. I'm so sorry, we should be having a jolly one. Hence the tune at the start. I was so looking forward to saying, ba-da-ba-da-ba-da. I can't even do that. You get what I mean. Anywho, tell you what, that was tiresome. That's only an intro. I'm going to lose some listeners due to this, to tell you what. I should have just put an old one out, shouldn't I, or something? No, I shouldn't. I should strive through. You deserve better. Yes, like Britain deserves better. We've had an election, you may have seen on the news. I won't get into who I voted for or whether I think the right decision was made, because it's not a political podcast. But let me just say, I'm from Liverpool, and if you want to see how Liverpool voted, you can go and see that online. But needless to say, the whole area did not vote the same way as the country. So that left us in a bit of a... Beck came up with a good phrase. She said, that's because we live in an echo chamber. She said, so we only ever hear our own opinions bounce back to us, and therefore we were all very surprised in Liverpool when the result was made. But yeah, you know, that's democracy for you. Let's hope they do something good. But we do need to get on some spooky stories, don't we? I do believe. I mean, I think you'll forgive me. This episode may be shorter. I do apologise, and I will make that up to you with the planned scripted special, which is going to be a Christmas carol. Yeah, that sounds fun, doesn't it? I do think so. Okay, but let's get some ghost stories on the go, because you know what? I'm in a bit of a zonky mood, as you may tell, and therefore I'm in the mood to get proper scared. Well, not proper scared, because there's a high chance I'll hallucinate, but, you know, scared anyway. I probably shouldn't be doing this in truth. I should be in bed, but I can't be arsed. It's very boring in bed. Well, that some porn star you'd make, Kevin. Anyway, let's get some ghosts on the go. Hooray. Now, just for the interest of full disclosure, normally when I go, okay, let's get some ghosts on the go. Hooray. That's what we'll call in the business an edit point. And that was one there. And I listened back to the last 20 seconds of that. And God forgive me, this... I feel really bad on you guys for enduring this. So I'm going to try and be a bit more sprightly and we'll see how that works out. Hooray. There you go. That was me being sprightly. But I would like to get onto a wonderful story that we've had emailed in. And this is from Tony Evans. And he's in Australia. I think he's in Australia. He must be given the location. But this is Tony's story, and it's brilliant. Hark at this, everybody. Hi, Kevin.
Hello.
I have came across your podcast via the Ghost Story Guys, and can I say I love it? Well, thank you, Tony. It made me chuckle on the bus and shudder at home on my own. My story is a little long, but worth it, I think. Some backstory. I grew up in Hendon, North London, in the 70s and 80s, in a very haunted house. But that's for a different time. You can't just tease us like that, mate. You do need to send the other story in. Anyway, I continue. This story is more recent. I now live in a new house in Canberra, the capital city of Australia. I have now lived in Oz for 22 years with my Australian wife and two girls. The paranormal has always followed me even across the world. When my mum died in 97, the year I arrived here, her spirit I would often see. This was a comfort, and over time she faded away to nothing, but I digress. We moved into our new house, then only a few years old, about 10 years ago, and it had no feelings of dread or worry. A very nice, bright house built in the bush suburb of Gordon. Now, 4 years after moving in, my wife and I were invited to a wedding of very close friends in the Hunter Valley. He says in brackets, the wine region just outside Sydney.
Ooh.
On one of our free days, instead of going to a winery, as neither myself nor my wife are real wine people, we chose to do a day tour of the recently decommissioned prison in Maitland. Now, both of us have a real passion for old prison buildings. Not sure why, he says. We were only two of six people all wandering around this vast prison that at one point held one of Australia's most notorious serial killers, Ivan Malat, in brackets, Wolf Creek, was basically loosed on him. Loosely based.
Sorry. Told you I'm not with it. Was based loosely on him.
Wow. Now, on the tour, we got the usual bangs and noises I am often used to following me. Now Karen, my wife, decided she wanted me to lock her into Ivan's cell. Bloody hell, mate. I say. I did this and felt huge amounts of dread and had a panicked moment and rushed her out of the cell. Wise move. Now, the tour finished up and we went on our merry way to enjoy a very hot summer wedding and thought nothing about our day at the prison until about a week later. I was off from work and about to put washing out. My wife was about to come home from her day job to get ready to head out with her mates. My older daughter was also out at work. My youngest daughter was leaving for work as I was heading out the sliding door into the back garden. I saw her leave through the front door as I glanced back through the sliding door. Here's where it gets odd. Very odd. I turned to open the sliding door and noticed it was locked. Now, this could not happen as the lock is very heavy and would take a heavy thump to drop. So I think what Tony means there, if you're following this in your head, he's outside now and the door's now locked him out. I think. I looked through the window and saw a large, dark, non-human shape, more of a mass, shoot up my stairs to the second floor. It was broad daylight, and to see a mass like this was something I had never encountered before. Jesus, Tony. As in, like, ask Jesus for help. I knew Karen was to be home very soon, so just put my feet up and waited for her to get home, about 10 minutes. I did not choose to tell her about the dark mass and said that the lock must be faulty. That night, whilst alone, I came over with this heavy sense of dread and could not make myself head upstairs. The thought of having my back to the stairs really scared me. Now, the odd thing is that this completely went away when all the girls were home, and I would forget about it Monday to Thursday. But as soon as all the girls were out Friday night, it would hit like a thick black blanket. I was meant to do DIY on the stairs, but was forever making excuses why that Friday it had not been done. It came to a head when I could hear movement upstairs on the wooden floors, and I knew I was alone. I mentioned it in an offhand remark to an old family friend, who, as it turned out, was very in tune with the paranormal. And she said that a spirit from the prison had followed me home and taken a liking to me. Run away, Tone, run away. She advised me to confront it and to tell it to leave, as it was not welcome. Well, as you can imagine, I felt like a right fool standing at the bottom of the stairs the following Friday and shouting at the top of my lungs, "Leave, you are not welcome." Well, I think that was very brave, Tony, to be fair. This is going to sound daft, Kevin, he says, but it worked almost immediately. I felt lighter and the feeling of dread left. Well, I'm very glad, Tony. Now, you would think this might put me off haunted prisons and buildings, but you'd be wrong. Fair enough. We'll send him more late stories later. Tone. Thank you, Tone. That's a cracking story, that. I do like that. I mean, one sec while I just fix this mic, because it dropped. There you go. Yeah, I do like stories like that, because there's something very obviously eerie about prisons in general, isn't it? You know, people who have been locked up there thought, one, if you're there, you tend to be evil, unless you've got a corrupt government. Or, you know, you're not, like the A-team, like you shouldn't be there. The A-team weren't bad people. And I'm sure the ghosts of the A-team wouldn't haunt a prison. No, they'd haunt Freedom Fighting College. Shut up, Kevin. But my point of it is, you know, if you are there, you tend to be a bad person. So if you die there, you're an evil ghost. And if you follow Tony home, then you're going to be a big black mass wobbling up his stairs. That sounds terrifying, Tony. But you did say that you have more stories, so please do send them in, Tony. And I will read them out. If you have stories and you want me to read them out when I'm all better, which will be fucking next week, because if it's not, I'm going to slit my own throat. I really won't. But do send them in to contact@talkaboutghosts.com. And someone much, much, much healthier than me, it will be me, just the future me, will read them out. Anywho, we have another story. We do have another story. That was an edit point there, guys. This is me now. I am officially throwing in the towel for this episode because I've just had like a 20-minute coughing fit. And none of you wanted to know that. But don't worry, the episode's not going to stop. So what I'm going to do instead, because I love you lovely, lovely people. You lovely, lovely people. Oh, put me to bed. What I'm going to do instead is the rest of this episode will actually be me and Becca. I'm going to pull one of the old Patreon episodes up and release that just for today only. I mean, it works twofold. You can see what it's like over on the Patreon site. And also, I just need to go to bed. So, next week, I will hopefully, because if I'm not, then I've got bigger fish to fry than just a common cold. But next week, we will be all singing, all dancing. So, you're going to hear what sounds like a show starting again now. And it won't be. It'll be a Patreon episode that you lucky, lucky people are going to hear. Depending on how quick this goes, I'll be releasing the Christmas Carol one for everyone as well. Yeah, bonus this week too. But I do sincerely apologise for this episode. It's no one else's fault but mine. But I honestly, God knows how long it would take me to try and get through this. And it would just be terrible quality, as you will have witnessed through the last 13 minutes. So, without further ado, I give you a Patreon episode and I'm off to bed. I shall love you all, and I shall see you all next week. Daddy, bye.
Live from Liverpool, we need to talk about ghosts.
Patreon podcast
with Kevin Eustace.
Okay, guys, we're here for a very, very special We Need to Talk About Ghosts Patreon episode because I'm with the wonderful Rebecca. Say hello.
Hello.
Well, Becca is in the midst of tidying her many, many clothes.
Trying to have a clear out.
Trying to have a clear out.
Far too many things.
You have far too many things. You do have far too many things.
The wardrobe's literally breaking.
It is literally breaking. So I'm going to be interviewing you about the Enfield Poltergeist whilst you're carrying on doing your things.
Yeah, because I can't stop. I'm right in the middle of it. And if I leave this room and come back to it, I might just break down and weep because it's like ridiculous in here.
Well, you might break down and weep when we discuss the Enfield Poltergeist.
Maybe.
Okay.
One can only hope.
The only thing I ask from you is that that you speak clear and audibly for the recorder.
Okay.
And you give your honest opinions and don't just say things like bollocks. Okay?
What if that is my honest opinion?
Then keep it to yourself and be nice.
No.
Okay. Well, I'm going to give you a bit of background about the Enfield Poltergeist. Do you know anything of the Enfield Poltergeist?
I know Enfield is in London.
Right.
I know there was a poltergeist.
We stayed close to Enfield on New Year's that time, didn't we?
Yes, we did. I know they didn't they make a lot of money afterwards?
No.
People who claimed it.
I mean, they've made money from it, but not a lot. I mean, I've no account for that at all, really.
Okay.
No basis for what I just said there.
Right.
Okay, so
I will tell you a brief history.
It's better be brief.
It is. I'm getting it from Wikipedia. So this is for your ears, Becca, because these guys know the Enfield Poltergeist story.
Oh, well, then don't bore them.
No, but it's always an interesting topic, and it's good to get your point of view on it. Don't bore them. How dare you?
Why don't you say it? They know all about it. Don't go
well,
on.
Some people
certainly don't do this for my benefit.
I am doing it for your benefit. You lucky, lucky thing. Almas, you lucky, lucky thing.
Stop that right now.
It's a lovely song.
Stop it.
Anyway, Randy Crawford, I think. Anyway, the Enfield Poltergeist was a claim of supernatural activity at 284 Green Street, a council house in Brimsdown, Enfield, England, between 77 and 79, involving two sisters aged 11 and 13. Okay? Mm-hmm. Some members of the Society for Psychical Research, such as inventor Morris Gross, you know what he invented? Do you know when you're at a bus stop and you see a rotating advertisement?
Yes.
He invented that.
Okay.
He made a lot of money.
Brilliant.
Which allowed him to go and look after ghosts. He's basically...
Look after ghosts? Well... Has he got a little shelter for ghosts? Yeah. And like retired ghosts?
Yeah, all right. He allowed him to go look for ghosts.
Right.
He's basically my idol. And really, that's what I'm trying to do.
Okay.
And writer Guy Lyon Playfair, who he did make a lot of money out of, to be fair. He made a lot of money. And they both believed the haunting to be genuine, while others, such as Anita Gregory and John Beloff, were unconvinced and found evidence the girls had faked incidents for the benefit of journalists.
Mm-hmm.
Members of the Committee for Skeptical Inquiry, including stage magicians such as Milbourne Christopher...
Members of the Committee for Skeptical Inquiry?
Yeah.
What a club.
You'd be good on that,
yeah,
wouldn't you?
Yeah, I would be good on that.
And Joe Nickel criticised paranormal investigators for being credulous whilst also identifying features of the case as being indicative of a hoax.
Right.
Okay. The story attracted considerable press coverage in British newspapers such as the Daily Mail and Daily Mirror.
Oh, well, if it was in the Mail.
Well, yeah. But I don't think it was as bad in those days, the Mail.
Yeah.
Well, then again, but didn't
tabloid,
they have that
wasn't it,
John... who was the fascist fella? John Mosley or something? He's a wrestler. It wasn't him. And it's now been loads of television series and dramatised and horror films. So that's the genesis of Enfield. Okay, that's it, very briefly. Now, so you've got your key players there. Okay. The family are called the Hodgsons.
Okay.
A single mother.
Right.
She's got three kids.
Yeah.
Two teenage girls and one young boy.
How young's young?
I think he was about 7 or 8.
Okay.
And the other key players are Morris Gross, who was the investigator who came on behalf of the Society for Psychical Research, or the SPR. Okay?
Yeah.
Now, they're a very respected Oxford-based organisation who've looked at paranormal things for years, hundreds of years. It's a very... You need to be very well-to-do to apply to get into it and all this. Carry on.
But they're not the sceptical people.
They're not the sceptical. The Committee for Sceptical Inquiry
mm-hmm.
are kind of... I don't think that they're nemesises, but, you know, both together, they give a all-round picture. You
right.
get both points.
Okay.
So, so that was that. So, basically, what happened there was that Peggy Hodgson, who was the mother,
mm-hmm.
right... she called police to her home in Enfield in 77 in August, claiming that she had witnessed furniture moving and that two of her four children, she had four children apparently, said that knocking sounds were heard on the walls. The children included Margaret, 13, and Janet, 11. Now, Janet is the key person that this all centred around.
The 11-year-old.
The 11-year-old.
Okay.
A police constable, Becca.
I understand.
Said that she saw a chair wobble and slide and could not determine the cause of movement. She's went on record to say that.
Right.
Later claims included disembodied voices, loud noises, thrown toys, overturned chairs, and children levitating. Although I think the levitation's a bit of a lie.
Right.
Because there's photos of her clearly jumping out of bed. But the key thing about the jumping out of bed photos is not her jumping out of bed. If you look to... I'll show you these photos shortly. If you look to the left, you see the curtain entwining with the duvet. So there's a series of photos you see her stood on the bed, mid-air of the bed, in jump, and then coming down. So it's like a timed sequence. But it just looks like she's jumping. But the three photos show the bed curling into the curtain more and more, which I think is the scarier part. Kevin speaking, that is. So over a period of the next 18 months, more than 30 people, including neighbours, psychic researchers, journalists, said they saw heavy furniture... Variously saw heavy furniture moving of its own accord, objects being thrown across the room, and their daughter seemingly levitate several feet off the ground. They also heard and recorded knocking and a gruff voice. The activity then came to an end in 1979, just as Kevin Eustace was born.
Ooh.
Ow!
Coincidence?
Coincidence? You tell me. So, the SPR members, Maurice Gross and Guy Lyon Playfair, said that they would go and investigate. Okay, now Playfair was not a journalist, he was an author, and he wrote a book called This House is Haunted. True story of the poltergeist. About the case. And he made a lot of money about it. However, he often doubted the children's veracity and wondered if they were still playing tricks and exaggerating. However, they did both believe that most of the activity was genuine, but some of it was fake. They still both said that some of it was faked. And their reason for it being was that the girls would say that whenever people came round to try and prove it was real, nothing would happen. But because it was real, they wanted them to believe, so they would fake it. Do you think that makes sense for two teenagers to do that?
I mean, the way to try and prove something to someone is absolutely not by faking it, isn't it? If there was a way of making people disbelieve you, it's by faking it.
Yeah, but if you were a child and you seen a cup move on its own, and then you called around all the adults and nothing happened, and they said, she's making it up. If you thought, I'll knock that with my hand, would you think, I'll knock that with my hand so that they at least believe something's going on?
Yeah, I can see why it's possible that that's the conclusion they came to, but that was a poor decision.
It was a poor decision, I agree with that. Because she was actually caught on video camera bending spoons and stuff and then trying to blame it on a ghost.
Yeah.
But, however, one of the crux of this whole story is that she was then, Janet was, possessed by the alleged spirit called Bill.
Right.
Right?
Okay.
And he was a guy who lived there. Now, and is allegedly the ghost that haunts the place.
Right.
So I'm going to play you some of the footage of Janet possessed. Okay, talking as Bill. Now, don't worry, she's not like... Nah, 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 nah. She's a bit like that, but she's answering normal questions. Now, there's an interesting thing that I want you to know about this. Okay, some of the investigators have said that it was staged and that she was just very good at mimicking a voice and she was possibly practicing ventriloquism.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? However, other investigators, when they've listened to the voice, have found out that the voice is actually coming from behind her.
How did you find that out?
You placing the microphone. And the noise that any vibration that was coming out of her neck was using vocal cords that we don't use.
What do you mean that we don't use?
I don't know. I'm just saying what I read.
No, don't make stuff up.
I'm not making stuff up.
What do you mean vocal cords that we don't use?
Apparently there's like a set of false vocal cords that a 13-year-old girl couldn't use or a 12-year-old girl couldn't use.
So shouldn't have been able to use for her age or... humans in general can't use.
Shouldn't have been able to use for her age. Let's go with that.
Well, now you're not sticking to your story.
Listen, don't shoot the messenger.
I'm not. You're not being clear. You're saying the different things. So I'm trying to get to the bottom of actually what you're saying.
Anyway, and talking about getting to the bottom of stuff, I'm going to play you some footage of Janet talking as Bill. Okay?
Right.
One sec. Okay, are you ready to hear some... the sound of Bill coming from Janet?
Yes.
Okay. What make you of this?
Let me hear you say my name. Come on. Let me hear you say my name. That's not my name.
Is that a bark?
No. It's come from a child.
In church? I've arrived in church?
Yeah.
With what graveyard does it say it's come from?
I don't know. It's in I used to live here.
I will tell you some more.
what he's saying. No idea what he's saying.
I want you to tell me.
But what do you think of that?
Whether you remember what happened to you when you died.
Oh, what happened when you died? Listen.
Just before you died and just after you died.
Let's see what he says. Blind.
Then I had an hemorrhage and I fell asleep and I died in a chair in the corner downstairs.
Right, so that's an 11-year-old girl saying that, saying that she went blind, she had a hemorrhage and she fell asleep in the corner chair in the living room.
Right.
What 11-year-olds do you know that would use the word hemorrhage?
One who's done research into how people have died.
One who's what? Can you speak up?
One who's done research into how people have died.
The internet didn't exist in 1970.
Oh, so no one could ever do any research ever.
The only people who knew the word hemorrhage were doctors.
Citation needed.
Citation needed. No, but that's an 11-year-old child, female child, at that. Because at least, you know what, if it was a lad, I'd say, all right, a lad's like going through the change. So he's like, oh, listen to my voice. I can do this. Whereas... she's a sweet little girl.
Is she sweet, yeah?
She's a sweet little innocent possessed girl.
Yeah, is she, yeah?
Yeah.
But children can do voices like that.
How do you know?
I feel like we've seen...
I can't do voices like that. Hello. Oh, yeah, I can, yeah. All right, yeah. Yeah, but I'm a man. I'm a man,
yeah, I know,
baby.
But I think kids can do voices like that, especially when they practice. Yeah, I'm sure they can. Didn't we see someone once... I forget where or what we were watching. It must have been one of your ridiculous things. Where it was a similar thing where this girl had been doing these voices of being possessed and she was like actually like laughing and she'd admitted.
It was jealous.
Well, then
she didn't admit it.
But she just came out with it in like normal conversation.
Yeah, she was just smiling and saying hello.
Yeah, exactly. So it was clearly a blag.
It wasn't clearly a blag.
It was, because she wasn't just in and out getting possessed then and just laughing and saying hello, was she?
She was.
She wasn't.
But why wasn't she? Doubt her.
What do you mean? It was just a normal conversation and that she was just putting on the voice every now and again for a laugh.
Do you want to know something which is both spooky and sad? Do you?
I guess so, yeah. For the purpose of the podcast, yes.
Okay. Maurice Gross, right. I might have told you this before, but Maurice Gross believed everything that went on. Right?
Yeah.
Even though he'd admitted that he'd seen them faking. The reason he said, like I said before, was that he thought he just wanted the adults to believe them. But he believed these girls, especially Janet. Mm. He's very fond of Janet. Right. And he, as I say, he invented stuff. He wanted to look at the paranormal, or look after ghosts.
Yeah.
And got this case, and he was a big believer in Janet. People argue, in later life, nowadays, that the reason for that, now we know a lot about Maurice, was that what got him into the paranormal was he had a daughter who went abroad and she died in a motorbike accident.
Aww.
And she was decapitated in this motorcycle accident.
Oh, bloody hell.
And he received a card, a birthday card. She died like 2 days before her birthday or something, overseas. And he received a birthday card sent by her brother, I think, to her at his address. Mm. And when they opened it, on the front was a picture of her on a bike. And inside it said something like, keep your head on or something. And there won't be much of that left either soon. Because he meant like she'd be bevied. You know, like something to do with, there was reference to a head falling off, but as a joke about alcohol.
Right.
In the card, which he seen as a coincidence thing. And her name was Janet.
Right.
And apparently he went a little bit,
so you think he had a bit of a soft spot for this Janet?
For this Janet. And he was also a bit obsessed with trying to prove life after death because of what happened to his daughter. Mm. So when this Janet came on the scene and no one believed her, he was very much believing it.
That is very sad. It's not spooky, but it's very sad.
It's spooky what happened to his daughter and the card and all that.
Not really.
It is.
It's not spooky. It's very sad what happened to his daughter. It's not spooky.
No, it is spooky.
Right,
you've got that wrong, Becca. That's how dare you get that wrong? Now, let me find out the actual thing with Maurice, with his daughter. Psychical investigator. Da 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 da. No, doesn't say. Early life, that must be it. Yeah, here we go. A personal tragedy launched Gross into psychical research when his daughter Janet was killed in a motorbike accident in August 76. Following her death, Gross reported that members of his family experienced a number of coincidences and psychic happenings, which led him to join the Society for Psychical Research and the Ghost Club in 1977. Then he went on to investigate the thing. I thought there'd be more about that, but it's not. Yeah. Gross was so convinced of Janet's voices that he offered £1,000 to anyone who could duplicate the voice by ventriloquism or any other form of trickery. That's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, how was that £1,000 not claimed? Because that must have been very easy for people to do.
Well, I don't know.
Was it claimed, in fact?
It doesn't say. What it does say, though, is that in 1998, Morris Gross sued comedian David Baddiel for £10,000 after Baddiel described a psychic investigator called Morris Gross, who lives in High Barn at North London and runs away with a married woman in Baddiel's novel Time for Bed. They settled out of court and Gross gave his sizeable winnings to charity.
Oh.
Because his name was Morris Gross, he was a psychic investigator and he lived in the same place.
Coincidence?
Not a coincidence. David Baddiel basically based it on him.
Did he?
Yeah,
you can't do that, you know.
No, you can't, because you'll end up losing £10,000.
Yeah.
So, very brief, but what, given what I've told you there, which is the first information you've received about the Enfield hauntings.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a load more. We could do it, and we will do, at some point in the next few months, me and you sit down and do a bigger take-apart for the full show. But from this little gleaning of the Enfield poltergeist, what do you take?
I think that little girl was definitely blagging.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, I do.
And that's it. Short and sweet. She's a black artist.
Yeah, I'm just not buying it. The fact you can't... I feel like possession just doesn't work in that way where it just flicks in and out so she can be like perfectly normal, natural, lucid, and then just come out with, hello, my name's Bill. And like, crack out, you know, it's... And then back, like, straight back to it, you know, it's completely like calm and happy about it. No, I'm not having it.
Oh, fair enough. All right, well, what if... look at these skulls here. Skulls outside on quads having a race.
Oh, yeah.
I hope they die.
Four-wheel
quad. So, what if I just all of a sudden go like this? What if I get possessed? You wouldn't believe it.
Right, so there's two things there. There's you going, what if I all of a sudden go like this? Mm-hmm. Which is one thing. That's just you doing that. And then it's, what if I get possessed? Which is a completely... They're two very different questions, aren't they?
But that's the thing, because I believe that possession could happen. But therefore, because you don't, I'm concerned that I could get possessed and you'd just be like, oh, what do you like?
I'm just like packing in.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Whereas I'd be like up on the ceiling, vomiting blood.
Well, what would you want me to do?
Get a priest.
Right.
Get two priests, a young one and an old one.
Catholic or Anglican?
Catholic? Anglican?
What?
What are the Anglican ones going to do? Bring the wives along? The devil would laugh at that.
What the Catholic one's going to do?
Say, we're celibate, we haven't got wives. Now you've hooked, Satan. I better stop this here before we get a bit...
Yeah, no, Catholic, I'm going to stop it,
Okay. Well, thank you for your time. And okay. We look forward to your scepticism in a future episode. Say bye to all the patrons.
Bye, patrons. Thank you very much.
Yes, yeah, so, and thank you very much, patrons, as I do say too. I'll let you get... How many hangers are there?
A lot.
I've counted 40. And well, I've made that
in that time, Rain Man.
I am Rain Man. Thank you very much. Powers of a Catholic, you see. Silly Anglican.
Powers of a Catholic.
You're an Anglican, but we've never established this.
No, I'm non-denominational.
You're non-denominational?
Yeah. Ooh. What do you mean, duh? I get duh just because I'm not religious.
God will smote thee.
Smote?
Smite? Smote? I don't know.
Oh, no, I don't want to be smoted.
Okay, well, thank you, Rebecca. This has been a pleasure.
Welcome.
Bye.
Bye.
Patreon podcast.